thank you and welcome for coming along to our due diligence forum, extracting more juice from yesterday's hero, a glimpse into the future of portfolio management. I'd like you, today I would like to introduce you to Aaron Minney, who will be the presenter. Aaron is the head of Alpha Strategies at Colonial First State Global Asset Management. Just to give you a little bit of background about Aaron, he's responsible for the assessment and development of investment capability across Colonial First State Global Asset Management's investment teams, as well as the design and the delivery of tailored investment solutions for clients, including bespoke alpha and beta product solutions. Aaron has over 12 years of investment management experience, spanning portfolio management, tactical asset allocation, and investment strategy roles. He's CFA qualified and was formerly the head of Australian fixed interest and a portfolio manager of diversified funds at Macquarie Investment Management and senior portfolio strategist at IAG Asset Management. Wow, that's quite a lot of information, quite a lot of roles there. But I think you will agree that more than qualifies Aaron to talk to you about this subject today. So he's going to talk to you about a range of challenges facing retirees, financial planners, and fund managers alike. He'll discuss how these challenges are currently being addressed, as well as what the future potentially holds. I guess there's been a lot of discussion, particularly at this conference over the last couple of days, about the retirement of retirement and the changing face and the changing requirements of retirees. So it's hardly a revelation to you that having sufficient income is one of the largest issues facing individuals approaching or already in retirement. And similarly, advisors are facing similar challenges about how to generate that income for their clients. I guess these challenges are further compounded by the fact that longer term expectations of returns from equities and also traditional fixed income products are falling, driven down particularly with fixed interest by excess demand is pushing down returns. So I guess we've seen investors chasing additional juice for their portfolio and unfortunately found themselves in perhaps higher returning but also higher risk type products. And again, we've seen a lot of these types of investments failing, particularly over recent times. I guess we've witnessed active investment management changing and has undergone significant change to meet the changing demands of investors. For example, the proliferation of boutique structures, the emergence of structured products and hedge funds in order to try and meet these changing demands. But for traditional investment managers, the challenge still remains to adapt, evolve and meet the increasing demand for this type of sophisticated product. So Aaron and his team have been thinking about these challenges, and I trust that you'll find what he says today both enlightening and thought-provoking. So please join me in welcoming Aaron to the podium.
Well, thank you, Tracy, and thank you, everyone, for coming along this afternoon. I must say that having attended a couple of other sessions here over yesterday and today, I feel almost redundant. In that a lot of the topic I've been talking about today has been touched on by some of the other presenters. But hopefully I will reward you by coming along here today by giving you something that's actually useful to think about and take back to your own practice and make you more prepared for dealing with your clients' needs as they go forward. And that's the essence of what we're trying to do. What I don't have today is an instant solution. You know, I don't think there actually is one there as yet. And part of the problem is why there's a lot of interest in a conference such as this, because we need to get there, and we're getting there incrementally. And as we go through, you'll see how this incremental adjustment has been happening and where we'll be getting to. Now, in particular, I'm going to talk about these topics. One's really the income needs for post-retirement investors, and we've seen most of that already in the conference here today. Talk about what fund managers are doing to meet these needs. Have a little bit of a look about what active funds are going to look like in the future. And if you go along to some of the other due diligence forums, you know, there actually are some of these out there today. But importantly, want to be able to touch on some of the implications for investors and their advisors. Because this is an important thing. It's no good having advancements and technological change if no one can use it. You know, can you imagine what it was like if... You know, I can think about my grandparents now, and they never used a mobile phone. You know, we all use one day in, day out, but a lot of that generation never did. So if you never used it, it was no good to you. You've got to be able to apply the technology that is there and get some benefit from it. Yeah, now, so a bit of a messy chart here, which you saw a bit on yesterday afternoon, but the simple message out of this is we're going to have more retired people. You know, ABS data, and the next decade or so, this little, I'll step over here and get a different set of light, there's more and more people are going to be retired. What does that mean? Well, there's more people that need income from something other than wages. Not everyone wants to go back to work. Not everyone wants to retire retirement, and they need income. Well, how do they get that? Government bonds was the old trick, you know. You'd sit in there, equity while young, invest in government bonds. You get about 6%. You know, I pretty much agree with Tim's comment earlier this morning. Then I don't have the gizmo working, so I'm going to have to rely on the old product here of sort of show of hands. Can I have a show of hands here for anyone who thinks that 6% returns for their client is going to suffice for their income needs? Okay, and I assume you're working with a Packer family, so it's good to see you've come along today. But by and large, 6% alone is not seen to be enough. You know, maybe the rest of you are all asleep here, but I think I'll take that as an agreement there. And it's not just fixed income and cash where returns have dropped. You know, there's pretty intense debate about what we can expect out of equity markets, and the equity fund managers telling you 10, 12, no, 15% sort of things. The cautious, more cautious minds who haven't got a product to spruik, we're talking single digits. So it's interesting. It's not just fixed income. Demand for product here has pushed market returns down. Yeah, and it becomes a problem when you're in a retirement phase where you're needing to draw down your assets. Yeah, because if you want to go for higher returns, you know, it's very easy to go into the equity market and get the equity risk premium. But when you draw down that income and then the equity market falls, you may not have either the time nor the funds for that investment to recover. And so this capital hit flows through to the end investor. You know, so they want to avoid this equity market sort of volatility. Yeah, and that was, you know, that's sort of was the idea of the original model, but we are really struggling to get the returns there. So what have we done? Yeah. We found other ways to get higher returns. You know, but there's one simple rule here, and it's really investing 101. Higher return, higher risk. You know, I was thinking there was two risk-free ways to make money. One was cash, but, you know, as we were reminded yesterday afternoon, the other one is you can work, you know, which is not a really an attractive alternative. But other forms of return require to take on more risk. The way to do that sensibly in using your portfolio is to diversify what risk you're taking. You know, you can take lots of equity market risk, you can spread your equity markets around. That's a good step. But if a diversified equity is still volatile, you need to think about other forms. Now, some examples here, alternative growth assets, you know, and we've had a couple of sessions around the conference on that, but almost by definition, there's not enough of these guys to go around. You know, the alternative growth sort gets out there, the investment banks find a way to spruik it up, put it out, list it on market, and it's back in the mainstream. So, yes, that'll get you a little bit of the way there, but it's not going to do the whole lot. The other option is to go into high-yielding fixed income assets. That's been a great idea. You know, high returns, smooth, consistent, not as volatile. Look at the historical volatility of these funds. It's been great up until the last couple of months. Let's have a look at some of these things here. You know, Amaranth is a good example that was mentioned this morning. This is really a very large global hedge fund targeted by sophisticated investors. And it went belly up. Now, it wasn't that people didn't understand what they were doing here. These were sophisticated investors who wanted those higher returns and knew they had to take the higher risk. The question that comes back to the individual investor is, does he understand this risk? And is he prepared to take it? Now, locally, we've seen other examples. You know, I think we're finally starting to see this sort of not be in the media. But we've had West Point, Bridge Corp, FinCorp, Australian Capital Reserve, all lose money in the Australian property market. You know, basis caps now are basically in verge of collapse because of the US property market. You know, one thing that's not sure to me, you know, is while investors were probably aware these were riskier, but I don't know if you remember the TV commercial for Australian Capital Reserve. It used to have the retired grandmother sitting by the pool in the luxury sort of accommodation. She'd go down and kiss her monthly check and say, yippee, look at this. I wonder how many of those retired grandmothers realised that they were funding property speculators, and that's how they were getting their returns. You know, the outcry we've seen in the media and sort of from the public sort of highlights that they were happy with the returns, but they also wanted their money back. You know, it's the kind of thing with most investments. When you give someone your money and earn your returns, you do like to get it back. You know, it's not that this isn't an asset class you have to avoid. You know, there are pitfalls, there are advantages. The critical thing is to understand the risk. Everyone understands the equity market risk. It's volatile, it could fall, it's an equity market. You know, 10% drop in the last couple of weeks, well, yeah, it happens. At least it's not 40% in a day. Clients can understand that. When they go into these other forms of risk, alternative growth assets, default risk from high yield securities, leverage. You know, how many people understand what the effect of leveraging a high yield asset is compared to leveraging in an equity market? Liquidity. You know, there's a good example there in some of the high yield, but it's typically thrown at the hedge funds or the private equity. It's well and good to have a great returning investment, but how much should you give up for the fact that if you want your money today, you have to wait 5 years to get? You know, these are all the questions that are being thrown at investors, you know, particularly those that are approaching retirement, of which there's many more. It's very complex for them. It's very complex for me, and I'm sort of in the industry here. You know, what this is doing, it's providing a greater role for someone to understand this risk and be able to deliver a solution for clients, whether they be a small retiree or large, you know, global, international investors. Someone has to understand what the risks are and manage them for the clients there, you know, in order to get the returns that we see. So that's covered a little bit about the demand side and that people want the income. You know, and as any student of economics would know, when there's a change in demand, there's usually a supply side response. So what I want to step through now is having a look at what the supply side response has been. Again, some of the forums around here today are people telling you about their supply side response, but I'm trying to go a little bit more broadly and not too directly about anything in particular. You know, we have seen a lot of financial innovation, you know, whether it be from investment banks and sort of structured products, leverage products. I think Perpetual had a session yesterday on the rise of capital protected products. All this financial innovation to try and get better solutions for the client. You know, managers are trying to provide a better return of return and risk. You know, in fact, their business models depend on it. You know, and I'm going to draw on a couple of management consultants here. And as someone said to me, if the management consultants are talking about it, it must be pretty clearly understood. You know, Boston Consulting Group. And just to really make a mess of you, I want to draw attention to a couple of points on this chart. What we have here is a whole bubble chart looking at sort of types of funds. On the vertical axis over here, we have projected growth rates. It's actually a couple of years old, but the actual growth rates have been closely in line. And down the bottom is the margin, which I don't want to focus too much on here. But let's just focus on the three different areas. First one, the section A up here is basically index funds or pure, you know, beta plays. You know, low margin, manager can provide great source of beta or market exposure for the clients at low cost. Section B, traditional products, standard active management funds that you've probably all been using for your clients for the last 10 to 15 years. And way over here, hedge funds, private equity, structured products, real estate, quantitative products. These are all the innovative products out here in Section C. The important thing from this is if you look at it, all the traditional products, your standard active management, are all sub-trend growth. Yeah, why is that? Well, that's the market. That's what we're operating in as an asset management firm. That's what yourselves are operating in as intermediaries to the end investors. What is happening, and it's a very, if I jump on the next slide, it's a very simple idea. People only pay for value add. In investments, clients are only going to pay for adding value. You know, I've heard several references to benchmark huggers. Why pay for that? Exactly. Why pay for it? If you can get an index for 10 points, why pay someone to give you the index for 60? That's a challenge not just for you as an advisor or an investor, but also as a business to think about, you know, what is the business model? And what are we able to provide? If you want to be a fund manager that provides an index-type fund and charge an active fee, you'll go out of business. What you need to do is sit down and think about what it is that adds value for the client, because that's what they want. And that's what, you know, is happening with the good active managers. You know, they can sit down, they can have a look at their skill set, and they say, right, the clients want our skill set. They may or may not care about whether we're good at getting into the market, but let's give them the skill set, and let's find an efficient means for doing this. Yeah, and this is what the whole alpha, beta separation and everything is all about. But to make it a little bit easier, I just want to step through the evolution of the industry, and you can see why we're getting all this talk about sort of what's happening in the market and where we're getting to, and why there is a real need to actually be doing stuff about it now. Yeah, here's an initial, very, very simple setup on the concept of funds management. We have a client, we have an asset manager, and we have a client who discovered that they're really not a professional and probably shouldn't be managing their asset there. And they had one single manager with one balanced fund, often a life company. You know, and this was not uncommon sort of 15 years ago and was about the only thing there was 20 years ago. Looking around, there's a few of you out there that are probably a little bit older than me. Is this sort of ever seen this in your client base? How many of you have a lot of clients sort of with this set up today? No. What happened? Well, yeah, you diversified assets, fitting with finance theory, it's great. But I found out that, you know, I was earning 8%. This guy here, he's earning 12%. And I'm going, well, hang on. What's happened to me? Yeah, I've got the dud. The clients discovered manager risk. So they went along and they found someone who actually understood a little bit more about finance theory than just diversify your assets. They added a financial advisor in. The first step was to sit there and say, well, you know, you need to diversify your managers as well. We had three balanced funds. Now, this is probably maybe 10 years ago, give or take a little bit, quite a common practice. People thought about this and thought, yeah, this is good. I've diversified my managers. I've diversified my assets. It's not looking too bad. What they discovered is the guy over here who's really good at running equities, another guy over here who's really good at running bonds, and I'm giving bits of both to everyone to manage, and it's not really the most efficient. So was born the asset class specialist. The next step. What have we been doing here? We've been going from a general, I need to invest, and use a professional, to using more and more of that professional skill base. Now, this is the most efficient way to get the returns for clients, and it's the natural evolution of the market. Now I'm going to move on to the next step, which is where we're going, and that's looking a bit messier, and it's a lot more complex. The trouble is that is where we are going. It is a complex situation. We need to think about how to deal with it. The alternative is to sort of try and take a step backwards into the simple solutions that are easier to talk about, but don't end up giving the client the best return they can get. You know, and if someone's doing this, there's going to be pressure for everyone to be trying to do it. And what this essentially is, another, you know, someone referred to being fear of Greeks, there's alpha and beta, which are a couple of, you know, first two Greek letters often used in finance industry. What does that really mean? Well, beta is just a market exposure. Now, you go down and we're talking this morning all about the asset allocation. That's all about how much mark exposure do you want? What's the beta exposure you need? Alpha is the amount of value add you can get beyond that. And yeah, at least there was, and I've gone blank on the name, but from Select up on the table this morning, talking about managers adding value beyond a benchmark. The whole concept here is not that you have to all go into diversified hedge fund of funds, but that when you're thinking about your managers and your investments, you're thinking about their skill set and doing lots of things. But the first thing you need to think about is how much of each market do you want your client to have? How much skill does a manager have in adding value in that market? And the third element, which is this, what I've called exotic beta here, is how good is a manager getting exposure to one sector compared to everyone else? And this is sort of where I think of exotic beta, because I don't like the name alternative. Exotic beta is just something that's hard to get. You know, anyone can go out and buy an ETF, a share market or an index future. It's pretty hard for an individual investor to go out and buy, let me pick a UK water company, for example, you know, and get infrastructure investment in that case there. Not everyone can go out and buy a whole toll road and put it in their portfolio. So you need to have managers that specialise in that area there to give you that market exposure. These little grey bits down here are the pure alpha. They're the hedge funds that they've generated active returns that are market neutral. You know, so there's a whole bunch of building blocks that, while it does look very complicated, are steps that we are naturally evolving to. The critical thing is sort of what the active managers are actually doing. You know, if I can, yeah, I can step back here. It used to sort of take the whole asset class, the whole active return, the whole space there, nice and easy. Now you can sort of have more active return or less active return across the whole market. You know, what's more cost efficient? Well, more cost efficient is actually to take the red section, find an active manager who's really good, get him to deliver you more alpha than what his sort of weight is, if you like, and you know, you've got that capacity there. If you still want that market, there's an index fund which is cheaper, and that way there you avoid paying the active return on the market exposure. It may be that you know, you're more like the blue and you want less active return because you don't think someone can add value in that space. But the critical thing from an industry and a supply side point of view, which I think needs to be clear here, is that as active management continues to evolve, it's going to be focusing on their skill set and focusing on the value add that determines the successful companies. That determines who's going to be available for you to invest in over the next 10 years. Yeah. I just want to take another pause here and delve a little bit more deeply into this active management. I'm going to quote from Grinhold, and he gives us the fundamental law of active management. Just simply that information ratio is the information coefficient times the square root of breadth. And this is really useful because the information ratio tells us how consistently a manager outperforms their benchmark. Whew. That's pretty complicated. Nice little simple sentence. It works really good in finance text. But we can convert this to everyday English, which just says that the success you have is a function of skill and opportunity. Yeah. How successful you're going to be depends on how good you are at doing something and how often you do it. Now, we may be out of the race course here, but we're not far from the cricket ground. You know, and I tend to think of as Ricky Ponting as a pretty skillful batsman and Glenn McGrath as not being so good with the willow. But there's a reason why Ricky Ponting bats at number 3 and not down at number 11, because that gives him a greater opportunity to score the runs. What we need to focus on in this space and what active management is all about is generating greater level of success by focusing on A, getting the best skill, finding managers who know what they're doing, and B, having the greatest opportunity set available. Now, I don't want to go into the skill set today. I want to have a look at the opportunity set and highlight sort of some of the constraints that we have in a traditional portfolio. And as you know, you're probably all aware, the traditional portfolio does limit the constraint set. And this is the context where I want to sort of think about sort of squeezing the amount of juice out of the orange. What we're trying to get to is a stage where we can extract as much value or as much juice from this orange as we can. Now, if you think about the way you juice an orange for a second, is you basically get the orange and cut it in half. You've got your two halves which you can squeeze on the juicer. So what I want to think about is a traditional sense will says, well, if you want to go long, that's fine. Stick one half on the juicer. You know, the little thing squizzes around, juice comes all the way out. That's really good. But I don't like you doing it twice, so you're just going to have to squeeze the other one by hand. So you can get a bit out of it, but you can't get the full extent. You know, and that's the shorting constraint. Let's just step through a simple example here. Now, there's no magnificent insights to any of our portfolios here. This is a stylized example. Assuming you had an active portfolio of 50 stocks, this is your weight, you know, give or take a little bit. You've probably seen something familiar with managers before, but let's just say we extend the capacity here of the manager. They've got all these stocks that they know are not great stock investments, but they can only sort of not hold them in a long-only context. If we allow them to go short, it means we can, you know, extend out over here, pull these stocks down below the benchmark, invest in, say, maybe another 20 stocks. We've still got some good ideas out there, not as good as the first 50, but we can find another 50, and we can put some more money into our good ideas. Now, if I sort of get this to work, there's not a big difference there, really. It's the same skill set. Okay, you need to understand this shorting at this end, but the profile's quite similar. You know, and this is sort of the extension of active management. You know, they're often just called active extension. Other names, you know, 130-30, 120-20, long short, a whole bunch of names, but they're becoming more popular. The concept is that it's just being able to relax one, maybe two constraints in terms of a traditional manager to use the same skill that you're all familiar with a long-only investment, to extend that opportunity. And extending that opportunity is going to increase the success rate. You know, and this, you know, I haven't pulled out any physical examples here, but the research that you look into this, it's almost automatic, because all you're doing is finding the capacity to generate more value out of something you weren't doing before. If you like, instead of having to squeeze this one by hand, you can now put it on the juicer and extract everything that you know. You know. And I think the other point that comes back, and this sort of is where it starts to veer into a little bit about talking about our own product or what we're doing. If you think about these concepts, traditional active managers are actually very well placed to talk about this stuff. What I went through in that long short, there's no hedge fund mystique that has to be hidden away and transparent and illiquid. It's the same skill set that active management has always used. You know, what you get with a traditional manager that extends in this space is you start off with transparency, liquidity, corporate governance. All these sort of issues start there, and you're now getting concentrated form of the alpha. Indeed, if you have a look at some of the hedge fund offerings, the hedge funds are trying to generate this same idea of more liquidity, more transparency, and look more like a traditional fund so they're not so scary. You know, and that's really what it is. Now, the folks here, I have used a simple example of an extension strategy. It's not the only way to get more bang for the buck. You can change some constraints, increase the concentration, allow opportunistic, non-benchmark exposures. You know, a technique much more common in fixed income space than equity, but certainly if you're looking in the property space, people are looking more at that as the benchmark narrows. How can I take exposures into global listed property into my Australian portfolio? These are the sort of products that are coming out there that the active managers are looking to deliver to, you know, capture part of the growth on that side. But we've seen the demand side saying, well, they need to have it for the income. Supply side needs to get there to survive. It's not something you can sit back and say, you know, this is all too hard, I'm just going to stick to my basic portfolio, unless you're going to stick back there. Now, the reality is we've taken steps 1, 2, and 3. It may take some time, but step 4 is coming. And I think as advisors and intermediaries, you need to be aware of what's happening in that space there to be able to compete to get those returns. Now, the alternative might be that you actually have to say to your client, well, you know what, you're only 65. You've got to work, you know, 10 hours a week for the next 10 years in order to survive. You know, and I don't know about you, but I'm certainly hopeful of not having to do that. The other thing, it may bundle alpha and beta. Now, alpha-beta separation is not about having index funds over here, hedge funds over there, and never the twain shall meet. You know, it's usually more efficient to attach some market exposure to someone managing the assets. But it doesn't have to be one-to-one. You know, and finally, and this is the point, you know, the hedge fund guys do make, is that there is a potential to use a pure alpha stream or just active management to supplement that income. You know, you may have some concerns as to how much you can generate out of active management over time, and that's true. You know, the average is very hard to beat the market. It's something that isn't. It's not plentiful. But when you have a look at the guys, and it's a bit like the old asset allocation. If you look at the guys that are actually trying to do this, and you look at these diversified hedge funds or funds, they're consistently giving you, you know, 3%. Maybe it is only 2%. They used to give you 5%. But the guys who try and do this do. And that's after they take their 2 and 20 type fees. So it's not like it's impossible to structure this up in that sense there. Yeah. Implication number one. Traditional funds are an alternative. You know, one thing that still perplexes me is that when someone sort of allocates and they think about equities, bonds, property, cash, alternatives, it's like, what's an alternative? You know, 30 years ago, a managed fund used to be an alternative, but now we know a managed fund's just a fancy name for an investment vehicle. Hedge funds today, well, what's a hedge fund? It's a managed fund where they sort of have a bit of leverage in the structure there to the either the market or the skill or something else within the structure there. And the same, you know, they buy and sell, they trade, you know, they deal in markets. It's the same thing. It's just, you know, it's been a scary name that people are not used to. The big difference is sort of how much transparency and what you can see, what information you get. The risk budget. No, and again, we had the exercise this morning and it was all in the context of how much equity, how much property, how much cash. The reality, the question you need to ask is how much is devoted to the active return stream? You know, and that may be too hard, in which case, you know, index is a viability. You know, and there are large managers out there that are going to do very well being big global index players. You know, I come from a shop where, you know, we don't play in that space because we know we can add value, you know, ahead of benchmark, ahead of costs, you know, and we are looking to package that up and deliver that to clients. And we're not the only ones. You know, just about every active manager out here today has been telling you about the same thing. You know, I think from an industry point of view, the worrying thing is if you sit back and sort of think you can sort of, you don't need to get there. And I think if anything, that's, you know, that's the point you really, I think, really needs to come across. You know, you can come across these things today and sort of see all the exciting things. But I think the reality is that if you don't go with it, it's going to be sort of not just dull, it's going to be very dangerous as well. You know, the investors do get a big benefit at the end of the day here. They get a better risk-return trade-off and potentially lower costs. You know, and as we squeeze this retiring age bulge through the system, we need to find a way to generate the income that they need, generate the returns from the investments, because, you know, the alternatives aren't that great. You know, Tim made a big point about sort of the profit share, you know, being so high. Well, I think the retirees must be pretty happy with that, because there's only two other things that money goes to in the economy. It goes to profits, it goes to wages, and it goes to tax. And if I'm a retiree, I'm not going to want to see it be taxed, so I have to live off the age pension, which is getting smaller as you go. And I'm certainly not going to want to have to work until I die. And maybe in a case when they set up 65 as the retirement age. But certainly it's not the expectation of retirees today. So they should be happy to see those profits and generating returns so that there's an income stream for them to survive on. Yeah. But the scary thing, you know, and this is where the role for the intermediaries becomes bigger. And it's not just advisors. You're looking at other intermediaries, super funds, platforms, they're looking to prepackage a lot of this stuff, you know, and we've been working with some of those intermediaries in the last 12 months where they're looking to, you know, within their structure, have a blended solution. You know, they can offer to the clients, it looks more like a active fund, but it's got, you know, more than one level, you know, more than one time sort of leverage to a good active manager's skill set, you know, and package that up cheaply there. So it doesn't all have to be you. But there is a need to understand what's going on and to manage this. You know, clearly, you know, some clients here may, they may be all on top of this and be able to do it all fantastically. I might be arrogant enough to think that I could probably do it for myself. But I would say very clearly for a lot of people, this is going to need to be outsourced, you know, to one level or two levels of intermediaries and trustees and guidance. You know, and it matters because it's these people's income and their livelihood. It's how they survive once sort of they've stopped working. And, you know, as an industry, that's sort of, we're growing because of that need. We need to be aware of being able to meet those needs and deliver to clients what they actually want, which is why you're going to see active managers that deliver more active product. Yeah. Finally, if I can just recap and, you know, perhaps, you know, make sure I haven't forgotten anything in standing up here and stuck between the headlines. You know, there are changes happening out there to investors' needs and what they want. The active management is really trying to deliver to those needs and get there, but there are challenges with what you need to do. There needs to be an understanding of what those risks are and be able to manage them and generate the return from those risks that we all know you can get. Now, there is a benefit at the end there for the clients and the investors and the advisors, but these challenges for manager assessment and portfolio construction can't be ignored. Now, hopefully, you know, I know I'm keeping you from lunch, but does anyone actually have any questions or any thoughts, any comments?